no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. This week, we begin with the Hallmark Playhouse, their episode from February 22, 1951, titled Valley Forge. After that, it's the Listener's Playhouse, and No Program Tonight or The Director's Dilemma, their episode from July 13th, 1940.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. From Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Van Heflin in Maxwell Anderson's Valley Forge on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight, the night of Washington's birthday, we are proud to present on our Hallmark Playhouse a radio dramatization of Maxwell Anderson's play Valley Forge. Maxwell Anderson, one of America's leading playwrights and the winner of a Pulitzer Award, has a genius for clothing the stirring events of history in poetic drama. And in Valley Forge, he takes as his theme those days of destiny when the future of America hung in the balance, and when everything depended on the heroism of American soldiers and the inspired leadership of their commander-in-chief, George Washington. Valley Forge is a great play by a great playwright. And, I might add, we have a great actor to play the leading role tonight, Van Heflin. And now a word about Hallmark cards from Frank Goss before we begin the first act of Maxwell Anderson's Valley Forge.
May we remind you once again that for every occasion important to your friends and loved ones, there are Hallmark cards to carry your thoughts across the miles, across the years, or merely across the way. A Hallmark card says what you want to say, just the way you want to say it. And that identifying Hallmark on the back says that you cared enough to send the very best. Now, Hallmark Playhouse presenting Maxwell Anderson's Valley Forge, starring Van Heflin.
It is the third winter of the Revolution. The British have taken Philadelphia, and now, up the river from General Howe, the ragged remnants of Washington's army battle the grimmest foe of all, despair. Inside one of the crude huts which serve as barracks, three soldiers spoon through their evening mess.
Congress food, that's what it is. Send straight from the Continental Congress to their Continental Army, and well they think of us, too.
It's eat this or nothing.
What this army needs is boots. Last night on sentry duty, the frostbite got a couple of my toes.
I'm going to get me something fit to eat.
Hopeful, ain't he?
I know where I'll find it. There's plenty of wild meat back home.
Maybe, but it's a long walk to Virginia.
And a deserter gets 75 lashes.
If he gets caught. I aim to walk away from here while I got strength to walk.
Teague!
No, Teague, no!
Goodbye, boys.
Teague, come back here.
Man, it's desertion. It...
Hello? What's the trouble? Good Lord, the general himself. I believe I heard the word desertion used.
We were just talking, General Washington.
I'll take care of myself, Neil. General, sitting here starving down to my hide and buttons isn't my idea of war. What's the harm, sir, letting us that can't be fed go home for the winter? I could shoot me some wild meat, and when spring comes, I'll be back to fight again.
What is your name?
Teague, sir.
Well, Master Teague, you're quite right from your own angle. But this you should know. If General Howe discovers how many have already deserted, how many are sick and out of munitions, You'll come out of Philadelphia and wring our necks one by one. Every able-bodied man that owns a gun and shoes for his feet has to look like 10 men if this nation is to come through the winter alive. Are we tired of this war? Do we want to quit?
No, sir.
I'll tell you why I'm here and why it seems to me worthwhile to stick with it while our guns rust out for lack of powder and men die around me for lack of food and medicine. What I fight for is a dream, something that's never been on this earth and never will exist unless we make it and put it there. The right of free-born men to govern themselves in their own way. It's for you to decide, Master Teague. If we lose you, if you've lost interest in this cause of yours, we've lost our war, and the men we've left dying on our battlefields died for nothing whatever. For a dream that came too early.
General Washington?
Yes.
I'm sorry this happened, sir. I guess I can stand an empty belly a while longer.
Valley Forge, January 16. Gentlemen, I beg of you some manner of reply to my request for food. What strange war is this? While you and your families eat well, we perish. While we bury our dead, our citizens in Philadelphia entertain the enemy.
No, you should have loved a soldier, Master Lady.
Or perhaps a general. General Hong.
That's good advice, my dear.
When I was a child, a young man came wooing from Virginia way. We fell in love. But my parents said, no, this is an Indian fighter. You are rich and may turn out good looking. Let him go and catch yourself alone. And I let him go and caught myself a captain of Marines or something of that kind. I never loved him. I wanted what I lost.
The Indian fighter?
The Indian fighter. The rebel Washington.
Ah, now I know the identity your mask conceals. It's known that Washington once wooed a Mary Phillips.
And I would return to him. If you would but give me passport.
Never. You are not to cross the lines.
And yet I will. I promise you.
I am aware, sirs, that my name no longer finds favor with the Continental Congress. General Gates wins the victories these days. And General Conway, here in my own camp, conspires to replace me. It seems my only friend is a foreigner, the Marquis de Lafayette.
Major Andre.
General Hart.
Bad news comes tonight. The French alliance will be made with the colonies.
Oh, too bad. This will give Washington great encouragement. At the very moment you've won your war, to see it botched,
there's still hope. If Washington can be convinced that the French will not help...
Now he knows.
Not yet. We've taken the ship that brought his letters. If I can but reach him before he learns the truth...
He might surrender, yes. But how's it to be done?
Part by cunning, but more by the innocence of love. Excuse me, Major. I would dance this minuet with a certain lady.
Last night, there was mutiny in the 18th Regiment. This will happen again and spread.
General Washington?
Yes, Captain.
Marquis de Lafayette and General Varnum, sir.
My compliments, Commander.
You wish to see us, General?
I wish your advice, my friends. Upon your answer depends whether I send this letter or end my efforts. The reports before us show that we've neither food, nor clothes, nor arms for the maintenance of an army, nor defense if we're attacked.
And the British know it, too. And that our Congress is rotten. And the generals quarrel and connive to ruin you.
Then think and answer carefully. My question's simple. Does this end the adventure? Is the revolution over? Or is it worth trying to hold on into spring when at least there's food to be had?
It'll cost lives by hundreds, perhaps by thousands.
Hold on till spring? Never.
You cannot wait. I know it. Not possibly. Yet, if you knew what dreams and faith rest on you, you would do this impossible. I'm a young noble, rich, spoiled, perhaps not wise. I'm 20 years old. I left a child wife in France whom I love. I came because the best life in all this world lives here in what you have to do.
And what is your advice?
This world you have cut from the wilderness is a new world, a brighter world than was ever known in the star we inhabit. Each man is a king and walks like a king. You will find this not easy to throw away. This dream of yours, the name of Washington, mean much to France. So long as Washington fights, France will send men and money and ships.
There still is no alliance.
It will come, perhaps any day.
Yes, but the question is, can we wait?
What's on hand?
We might scratch up by equalizing 3 or 4 days' provision for every corps.
3 days. Almost to nothing. But still, we have 3 days, and the order's given. Well, we gamble our 3 days on a change of luck and face what brand of hell's reserved for madmen.
This is the man we heard of overseas.
Then excuse me. I will go and give the order.
Marquis, one moment. There was something you said that moved me strangely. You left a young wife in France. Does she mean so little to you?
It is a poor love that belittles whom it loves or would hold him back from. What is best and highest. If I wished to come, she would have me come.
Hmm. There was a girl one time, and I was 23. I might have loved so, might have loved me so. It's long ago. It came out otherwise. So, good night.
Good night, Commander.
General Washington?
Yes, Captain.
There's a woman here. Does she bring the message from General Howe?
A woman, do I know her?
You get one, sir. You called me Mary.
They say if one waits long enough, all things come around the circle.
George?
You came from Howe?
A woman's stratagem. Is a woman never to follow her heart and run after him she loves or to run back?
Still, you come from Howe.
I would have caught it any junker team that brought me here. I came on chance. I asked for nothing. But I'm here.
We'll find you lodging at the inn. But your message from Howe?
His proposal is general amnesty with no surrender on either part. The Congress to receive all his petition for, nothing reserved save the king's sovereignty.
When you see him, tell him we intend to fight while we can. We've asked complete independence.
Let me finish, sir. We have news today from Paris of the French alliance. This is your losing year.
So, the French refuse us.
Yes. But my dearest...
When blows are struck, they come not singly.
But still, there is love.
What love I have is given.
Then there is no hope.
There is only hope. We in this camp have nothing more. Captain.
Yes, sir?
Please escort this lady to the inn and secure her lodgings.
Yes, sir.
Then, good night.
Good night. 3 days. 3 years of war, and it's come to this. 3 more days. We've fought for a dream. Or did we but dream we fought?
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Valley Forge, starring Van Heflin. A kindness not expressed is a kindness lost forever. Did you ever stop to think how often one kind word changes the course of our lives? For instance, it was a kind note to a sick girl who had written a book, but whom he had never met, that started the greatest romance the world has ever known, and gave to all the generations that followed poetry that sings of that love. Yes, it was Robert Browning who sent a friendly greeting to Elizabeth Barrett on the publication of her book. And you know the rest of the story. But how often we let these gracious golden thoughts slip right through our minds. We all have moments when we'd like to say thank you or give our kind thoughts expression in some manner. Perhaps we are too rushed to write many letters, especially these busy days, but we can still keep in touch with our loved ones and friends. And the thought alone means so much so often if we give it action. You can, you know, with a Hallmark card. You'll find there's a Hallmark card to say what you want to say, the way you want to say it. That way your kind thoughts can live forever in someone's heart. And remember, that distinguished Hallmark on the back adds meaning. It says you cared enough to send the very best. Now back to James Hilton in the second act of Valley Forge, starring Van Heflin.
Another bleak dawn breaks over the snowbound army at Valley Forge. While Washington waits at headquarters for the arrival of a congressional committee and hope for help, the men in the barracks simply wait.
Shut that door.
It's Alcock.
Where were you last night? We figured you'd deserted.
You figured right.
And you were the one that tried to stop me yesterday.
Zeke, he's eating something. He's eating.
Where'd you get that ear corn?
I was fixing to tell you. I stole a boat. Was floating down the river to join up with General Howe. On the way, I passed one of those islands in the Delaware.
All right, all right. We don't care about that.
You should. It was a British island. They're using it to store hay for their horses and corn. Corn everywhere. Maybe 6,000 bushels.
6,000? But the Redcoats.
Oh, they got a few sentries guarding it. One of them challenged me. He's dead now.
And you came back just to tell us?
We're friends, ain't we?
If we go, it's desertion.
And if you stay here, it's starvation.
All right. Let's spread the word. Let's tell the boys there's 6,000 bushels of corn pone to be had for the price of a little shooting.
General Varnum, sir.
No, I was about to send for you, Varnum. There's serious trouble.
Oh, that you've heard? And one of our best companies, too.
What? Well, you must refer to another matter.
It's mass desertion, sir. Entire company of Virginia Rifles. They've stolen boats and headed downstream.
Sorry to hear that. But there's worse. A spy has been captured.
The woman who came last night from Howe?
No. No, she came honorably and openly. This was, this spy was captured with a certain letter. Here. You read it.
Sir?
Yes, Captain?
Master Harvey from the Continental Congress.
Well, then Betty Mentor. General Varnum, another time for this letter. Find me General Conway. I wish him here at once.
I shall tell him.
General Washington?
You are most welcome, Master Harvey. It's long indeed since I've exchanged ideas with Congress or its committees.
And this is a committee of one. My companion took ill on the road.
But still a committee. It'll hearten the troops to learn that they are not forgotten.
If there are troops to hearten, I saw very few.
Which brings us directly to the problem. An army cannot be held together on air. The past 3 months I have begged your Congress to appoint a quartermaster, and still there is none.
That is the reason for my coming, sir. General Conway is to be appointed.
Conway?
He is not to your liking.
If it's to be Conway, I'll resign.
You run things with a high hand, General Washington. Congress has yet some power over the military. You forget, sir, your star is setting. You lost at Brandywine and Germantown.
I lost, yes. Because first I must write 1,000 letters to 1,000 fools begging for the men, the arms, the food, the chance to get there late.
General Conway, sir.
General Washington? Master Harvey? Oh,
I see you know each other.
Yes.
General Conway, last night a British spy was taken. He bore a letter addressed to you from General Howe.
This is interesting. You tell a story well.
It contained the terms which would be acceptable to the English crown if the Continental Army were willing to surrender.
Sir, on my word, I know nothing of that.
And I, sir, on my word, say that you do and am willing to bring it to trial. You'll be held for court-martial.
Mr. Harvey, we shall need your word in this.
It seems hardly wise to make a scandal for the good of the service, General.
For the good of the service. Look, you, the evidence. Speak here at the letter.
Mr. Harvey, will you speak up for me, or must I speak for myself?
This is most unfortunate.
Master Harvey knows of this correspondence. Most of Congress. I was commissioned to angle for House
Terms. You were commissioned, you say? We must be practical, General. This war began to protect our trade, and now there is none. Under King George, at least there were some profits to be made.
Sir, I should have supposed you'd notify me before negotiations were begun with the enemy.
There was thought of it, but you and your army have so much of the hothead in your composition, it was believed unwise to open the subject. Besides, there was always doubt what reply we'd get from the British, and it seemed best not to call off our dogs until we were sure we had no need for them.
Your dogs, you say? And is this the reason supplies have been withheld and gone astray and all our calculations upset? To discourage us and call off your dogs.
General Washington.
Your dogs of war are yours no longer. All further negotiations with the British, I'll conduct them. You want the war ended, then, sir, we shall end it. But in our own fashion and on our own terms.
Send for me, sir. Your aide said it was most urgent.
It is. I've written your passport and orders for an escort.
But if I prefer to stay... George, what is
it? I've been a gull. They've led me by a ring like a circus bear to frighten the children for them. Behind my back, they made their shabby deals. Shilling for shilling. Men's lives for copper pennies.
Dear George.
The revolution is sold out. Now I'll make my own bargain with Hal. Return to His Excellency and tell him that I shall meet him at a time and a place of his appointment.
He has made that choice already. I was to tell you. Hay Island in the channel of the Delaware, near sundown.
Hay Island. Yes, where the British store their fodder, where once I'd hoped to raid. So be it.
Of all men I have known, I least like to think of you defeated.
Tell General Howe I'll be there. Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye.
This should be the place. There's no other building on the island.
Yes, a barn with a white flag flying.
Who goes there?
Generals Washington and Varnum of the Continental Army.
Enter, gentlemen.
General Washington, may I present General Howe?
This is a strange war indeed that ends with the help of a woman.
She came at my request, sir. I had heard that she was your friend and so might prevail to make you my friend.
First, let it be understood that if a peace is arrived at, we gain all things for which we fought, save our independence.
That is my offer. England wants you back.
And Congress wishes it. So I have no choice.
Listen. Gunfire.
Yes. You're going to be all right, Neil.
Don't bother with me, boys. I'm done for.
General Washington, I thought this island was under an armistice.
Oh, Harry. Look. We got company. Generals and brigadiers.
General Washington, these seem to be your men.
My apologies, sir. It seems they do not know the meaning of armistice.
Armistice? We've been raiding the British concrete.
You three, sir?
A whole company of Virginians, sir. We carried most of 6,000 bushels of corn back to our line. Some killed, some wounded, like Neil here. But the food's ours.
Good Lord. And I reported them as deserters.
See? Look up. Hold me up. Yeah. Get your ear, boy. Tell General Washington. Tell him.
Can't wait, sir.
No. He's dying.
General Washington, I suggest we proceed.
One moment. One moment, please. Boy, I'm General Washington.
Sir, we're going to win, ain't we? We got the food now.
Lad, things have gone too far.
I was afraid to die, sir, but not now. There'll be free men and a free land and no more kings. I loved you, sir. Our country. That's enough to die for.
Free men. In a free land.
General Washington.
Yes.
I heard what this lad said, die. And I'll betray you no further. The French alliance has been signed with the colony.
What? But I was told...
Letters came yesterday. They were captured by the British. I was sent to make a dupe of you.
General Howe.
Never trust a woman, sir. At least, not a woman in love.
This changes matters. Our war goes on.
But you've lost your Congress used for peace.
Yes, by all rules of the game, we're beaten. Let our merchants submit if they will, but this ragtag which I call my army will fight on. We're followers of a dream. A dream that men shall bear no burden save their own choosing. Shall walk upright, doff a hat to none, and choose their gods. It's destined to win, this dream. Even if we should fail, it is destined to win.
Then there's no point in talking further. Goodbye, gentlemen.
This is my last farewell, sir.
I owe you thanks, madam.
I know my debt. Little though I may like it, and it's not as high as yours. There are some men who lift the age they inhabit. So all men walk on higher ground in that lifetime. God keep you all and bring you victory.
And so we're left with some years of revolution on our hands. This liberty will look easy by and by when nobody dies to get it. We have food now for 2 weeks, and then for 2 more if we can find it, and 2 more if we can find it. And now I think we will.
Heflin and James Hilton will return in a moment. Whenever you buy a greeting card, you're not only thinking of someone else, you're actually buying for others. You are selecting with someone else in mind. And to that someone else, the card you select represents you, your thoughtfulness in sending it, your good taste in selecting it. Knowing this, the makers of Hallmark cards make it easy for you to find a Hallmark card that says what you want to say, the way you want to say it. Whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, a wedding, a going away, a get well, or a please write soon, you'll find there's a Hallmark card to fit the occasion and the person you're sending it to. Is it any wonder, then, that people of good taste have a standard of comparison for greeting cards? When they buy a card, they look for Hallmark on the back. When they receive a card, they automatically turn it over to see if that familiar Hallmark is there. For that identifying Hallmark on the back says, in its own way, you cared enough to send the very best. Here again is James Hilton.
You have made one of the tremendous characters of history live again for us, Van Heflin. Thank you for a vivid performance.
Well, it's always an honor to appear on Hallmark Playhouse, Jimmy. And tonight's story, giving us a new insight into the fine character of George Washington, was particularly timely.
Yes, it's the type of story we like to find for Hallmark Playhouse. A story about real people whose faith and courage inspired the lives of others.
I think that explains why your program always makes one feel somehow the richer for having heard it. And Hallmark cards have that effect, too. They express such friendliness and sincerity. I'm always delighted to receive them, and I always look forward to Hallmark Playhouse. Jimmy, what have you selected for next week?
Next week, Van, we shall bring you a swashbuckling story by one of America's best-loved authors when we present Booth Tarkington's Monsieur Beaucaire. And for our star, we are delighted to have Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. Our Hallmark Playhouse is every Thursday. Our director-producer is Bill Gay. Our music is composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. And tonight's story was adapted by Leonard Sinclair. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Look for Hallmark cards that are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. Van Heflin can now be seen in Tomahawk, a Universal International Technicolor production. The part of Mary Phillips tonight was played by Loreen Tuttle. Ben Wright was General Howe. Ted Osborne, General Varnum, and Ted DeCourcia, Mr. Harvey. Remember, inflation is everybody's business, and you can help fight it by buying only what you need when you need it, by paying no more than fair prices, asking no special treatment, making no under-the-counter deals, by doing a better job at your work, by not raising prices for what you sell. Remember, inflation hurts everybody, but everybody working together can kill inflation. This is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time, when Hallmark Playhouse returns to present Douglas Fairbanks in Booth Tarkington's Monsieur Beaucaire, and the week following, Blanche Chenery Perrin's Deep Wood, starring Rosalind Russell. And the week after that, Laura Ingold Wilder's The Long Winter on the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. This is KMBC, Kansas City, Missouri.
Ladies and gentlemen, when we announced the beginning of a new NBC feature, The Listener's Playhouse, which would come to you on Saturday evenings, we told you that we expected to present the work of three talented men. The series opened with a play by Albert N. Williams. It was followed by a piece from the pen of Ranald MacDougall. It is now the turn of John Latouche. Mr. Latouche is well known for his Ballad for Americans and for the wide variety of sketches he has contributed to Broadway productions. He calls his play No Program Tonight, or The Director's Dilemma, special music by Tom Bennett. Mr. Latouche expects me to continue by saying that The Listener's Playhouse presents No Program Tonight, or The Director's Dilemma by John Latouche. We take you without further delay to the studio, for a tender drama of felicity is underway. Imagine a Vermont cottage, white with snow, two people there. The man has much to say. The woman happy watches him and sees the firelight on his face. She hears the trees make sweet night music.
How often, Doris, in this shadowy room, we've faced the evenings, rounding out the hours with drowsy talk, and seen the errant moon dissolve against the dawn. Our quiet days, as garden flowers unfold their simple blooms, have brought to seed a plant that's rarer far than any man may know.
And I, serene, am drunk with this contentment, lulled with love, seeing the sure fulfillment of our years, forming at last the single shining star of lucid faith.
Even our doubts in time's dark passageway showed the wintry hills grown green as spring.
What are you doing?
Green as
spring. Oh, for goodness sakes, what are you doing? Pick up your script.
I can't do it. I just can't
do it. Pick up your script. Quick, pick it up. You can't stop now.
Can't I? I'm doing it.
But we're on the air. Everybody's listening. We've started. We've got to finish.
Why have we got to finish?
Why? Why? What a silly question. Oh, stop talking nonsense. We've got to because we're supposed to finish it.
My dear lady, you're a slave to convention. Firstly, many lovely things are unfinished. Rodin's statues, Leonardo's paintings, even Schubert's symphony was never completed. But that's beside the point. I don't intend to go on with this drivel another minute.
Oh, stop it. You're joking. No, I can see you're not. Don't you realize everybody's waiting for his cue?
Yes, I make my entrance in three lines.
And I stalk in only a page later.
I'm sorry. You'll have to carry on without me.
But we're on the air. Why, this has never happened before.
Well, it's about time it did. How can people read that stuff, much less listen to it? Lush, with a capital S.
Consider me the rejected suitor. In a while, I'm due to try and lead this happy wife astray in only two pages of metaphysical verse, including semicolons.
And I will lead her back to the straight and narrow just as she's about to crumble. And furthermore, as we all know,
the show must go on.
I will not ask why again, but I'm about to elevate my left eyebrow quizzically.
What's going on here?
Mr. Director, he won't go on with the play. He says it's lush.
With a capital S.
Your function is that of an actor, not a critic. You'll please begin reading again.
I'd like to oblige you, Mr. Director. Unfortunately, I'm a lost man. My larynx is going on strike. The text repels me. I'm a lost man.
You mean you're walking out on the show now?
You have translated my intention perfectly.
Who do you think you are?
I know who I am. I am a dramatic actor. My name is James Elliot Queaver, and I live at 593 West 10th Street. I come of a respectable, though average, family, and attended college until my junior year, when Pellagra of the Pocketbook sent me dewy-eyed out into the great world. How I happen to be a radio actor is another story, which you may have by sending me your name and $5 in Confederate money wrapped in a plain brown package. As you have surmised, I do not intend to continue this evening. As a matter of fact, I'm walking through that door tonight and straight onto a bus, and from there I hope I end up on the obscure desert island of Tiki Liki under a palm tree with swaying sepia maidens banging a dulcimer to lull me asleep at twilight. Do you get it?
The man's gone crazy.
Mr. Director, I know what he means. He feels lost, pointless, like all of us. Times are so funny. The headlines stare out at you when you pass by. Everything is moving so fast. Life is like an airplane, and you feel that you're all alone in the airplane. The other passengers flutter in the breeze like paper dolls. You look for the pilot, but then you see there isn't any pilot. Just a pair of empty white gloves clutching the controls. Words on paper stop meaning anything.
See here, miss, you can't...
My name is Eloise Farthingale. I live in a hotel with my mother, God bless her, and an older sister who reads in bed nights and keeps me awake. My favorite color is pink, and I like to watch the faces on the subway as I ride to work.
Cut the show off the air! The cast's going crazy!
I dislike spinach, unless it's cooked with bacon. I adore walking in the rain. I'm not fond of cats, but one day I hope to have a Scotty all my own.
May I ask why you feel compelled to tell me all this?
I want to remember who I am. It's so easy to forget nowadays. I know how she feels. There was a night the other night when I kept saying my name over and over to myself so I wouldn't forget it. The street widened like a river, and Europe and Asia and China were flowing over me in dark waves. I was a grain of sand, a nameless pebble.
And me. Lately, most everything I do seems pointless. I'm doing something, and all of a sudden I ask myself, why are you doing this?
And how do you answer yourself?
Oh, very politely, I assure you. I always think up reasons. Not very good ones, but reasons.
Extremely interesting.
But all the time I know I'm talking through my own hat.
May I again request you to pick up your scripts and carry on?
Don't you see? We're people, not machines. How can we produce those saccharine syllables when we're breaking up inside day by day?
This is... It's mutiny. That's what it is. Call in somebody. Call up somebody. You there in the control room. Hey, engineer, you look sensible. Come out here.
What do you want with me, companion? I was just about to take a little nap on the company's time.
He's going to take a nap? 18 years of radio tradition crashing down around our ears, and in the control room sits a sleeping beauty. Look here, ma'am. This is a situation that has no precedent. The actors refuse to go on.
The fact is, we declare the program liquidated.
It's mutiny. That's what it is, mutiny. Can't you say something, engineer?
I'm sorry, companion. My job is there in the control room. I'm not a speaking man. You do the speaking. I control your voice. I can make a voice go booming up into the clouds loud as that. Or I can make it sink down under the floor like an ant headed for China. Or I can thin it down to a mile away. Or I can wave it back and forth, back and forth. Like washing on the line. But, companion, I can't make nobody talk when they don't want to talk. Anyway, tain't a marathon to try to. Thank you, companions, thank you.
You can go back to your controls, though there's nothing to control. On your way, sir.
Okay, sir.
Good day, sir.
Good day.
You over there, mister, in a pile of drums, wooden blocks,
sheets of paper, whistles, door frames, bird calls, and bells. Sound effects engineer, step this way.
Me?
Yes, you. Talk to these actors if you can.
Well, I'm like the engineer at the control board. I can't say anything. I have no ideas. Words and me don't mix. I'm a silent man. Or at home, I talk to my wife and kid, but the minute I emerge from the old homestead, well, I'm a taciturn type.
Oh, this is the end. The end. I give up. I'm going back to vaudeville.
But vaudeville is dead.
Death before dementia precox.
It's easy for me to get on in radio. I don't need words. I'm a sound effects man. When I talk, I'm a bird or an insect. Or a roll of thunder. Or I open and close. Or a rainstorm. Or I can catch on fire. I can... Now watch me close. I can even strike 6 o'clock. But au fond, French for at the bottom, I'm helpless when it comes to saying anything.
Thank you for running your gamut. Now run back to your place.
Oh, Stanislavski, thou shouldst be living at this hour.
Mr. Director.
Hello.
Something not exactly heaven is being raised upstairs. People have been phoning in all over the place. They want to know what's happened to the program. What has happened to the program?
I wish I knew. Don't ask me. Ask those artless children of the theater over there.
Well, there's a vice president upstairs playing hopscotch with his blood pressure, and another one in the library looking up old Chinese tortures. You'd better do something soon or start rehearsing for your funeral. And with that burning thought, I leave you.
There you are, fellas.
Yeah, I'll get it.
You see? We're still on the air. People phoning in. Telegrams will start soon. Then the papers will take it up. Scandal. Publicity. Very fine business. You, orchestra over there.
What's this?
Can you play anything? Something to fill up the gap. Have you got any ideas? Can't you think of anything? Anything to play? What do you usually do when a program goes sky high? How do you fill up the time?
We have a piece we always play to fill up the time. All right, boys, get out the sky high music. Everybody play all the notes. From the top. One, two.
Stop, stop, stop! Can't you just play something dramatic?
Does it say in the contract we play dramatic?
No, it doesn't.
Then we don't play dramatic.
Oh, I give up then.
Don't get us wrong, Mr. Director. We know the show must go on and all that. We've always done it. But tonight we just thought, there the world is, and here we are. But where are we? Just voices floating out into the air at the beck and call of any Joe Public who twists a dial.
And every hour I'm a different voice. Mornings, I'm a dashing girl reporter who solves everything. Afternoons, I'm a misunderstood wife who can't solve anything. Evenings, I'm an adventuress with a plan for the Grand Central Station hidden under my vaccination.
Yesterday, I was Benjamin Franklin, proverbs and all, from 4 to 4:30. Last night, I was El Skunko, the perfume bandit, galloping through a bullet-splintered city high in the Andes for the greater glory of a national foot powder. But where is the real me?
Can I have 3 guesses?
And I've been a half-breed Indian girl in the North Woods 5 times a week for so long that I jump a mile every time I see a bolt. What goes on? And there I am. Wild Mag, the trapper's bride.
Yes, and I'm little Trixie.
I'm Brenda's first husband.
I'm Faribault Fanny.
I'm everybody's Dutch
on crazy? The mic is still open. You people are still on the air. Calls are pouring in. The trunk lines are jammed with telephone messages from the public. They want to know what's happening. Pull yourselves together and do something about it.
This is anarchy. You actors realize what you're doing? You're destroying tradition.
What does tradition mean today?
I don't get it. I don't get it. How can I speak to you? I know music. Music to move you. Say, orchestra. Maybe you can help me out with a tune while I'm talking.
Well, what kind of tune do you want?
Oh, any kind of tune. Something sweet. Something sentimental.
What is this sweet, sentimental? Look, Mr. Director. I hear these actors talking. I think I know what they mean. But what about me and the boys here? What kind of life do we lead? One mood music after another. One studio after another. We drag our brasses, woodwinds, strings, and everything. 1 minute play sweet boys. The next minute play hot boys. The next minute make it sad, make it happy, make it deep, make it light. I am an artist. The boys are all artists. What would Beethoven say if he could see us? What would Puccini say? Mozart, Stravinsky, Victor Herbert.
All I asked you for is one little tune.
And McDowell, Brahms, Schubert, Debussy.
Just one little tune. It isn't much. Just one little tune.
Delibes, Rimsky-Korsakov, Tchaikovsky. All up on earth. What kind of tune?
Oh, anything.
You settle for Hearts and Flowers, maybe?
Oh, yes.
I tell you, I do you a very special favor. I play myself.
You overwhelm me. Now, you fellas, listen to me. You can't stop now. Reflect a bit. What would Henry Irving say? What would Bernhardt say? Duser, David Garrick, all the illustrious treaders of the board, your ancestors of the sock and buskin. If you listen quietly, you will hear them all whirling in their graves. Even I am about to go out looking for a nice, quiet grave to whirl in.
I'm sorry, but it's no go. What does the past matter? This is today. David Garrick never listened to a news broadcast.
Sarah Siddons never had any union dues to pay.
Today makes its own rules.
Come on, let's go home.
You can't go home. You can't. You're supposed to be finishing this program. You can't walk out this way. You've got to keep talking.
The times have sealed our lips.
People are tuned in all over the country. They have a right to hear you. You're being paid to act.
We can't act anymore. What's the use?
You've got to keep talking anyway. You've got to say something.
You want me to say something? I'll say something. You people everywhere, are you listening? Are you there? We people here are just like you. We feel something in the air, but we know nothing. I hear myself talking, and what I say surprises me. The times are strange. Actions seem meaningless. Like you, I get afraid. I'm afraid now. Do you believe it? Listen to my heart. A terrified ticker. Could it beat any quicker? I read the papers, discuss the news, hear views, individuals saying this and that around about so many ideas and fears. I try to find out what's a fact and what's slander, what's proper and what's propaganda. I'm all dizzy with these duchies and Führers. Truth seems to be a trick that's done with mirrors. I'm confused. Honestly, like you, I don't know. Head in a whirl. Listen to my brain. That's my brain. Do I make myself plain?
As clear as mud, bud.
No, I think we'd better go home.
Who's that? Come in.
Excuse me for interrupting.
For interrupting what? Who are you? What do you want?
Well, sort of like this way. My wife and I live a few blocks away from here. We were sitting at home listening to the radio this evening, and all of a sudden the program seemed to break down.
You have a talent for understatement.
Well, you see, nothing like this has ever happened before that we know of. Wife is rather nervous, you know.
No, I didn't know. How could I know?
Well, she is. So, well, us being so near, we thought we'd come over and find out what the matter is.
Well, if you do, let me know.
The man downstairs at the desk told us to come up and ask you.
My dear fellow, you come at a most peculiar moment. Everything has fallen to pieces. I have given up.
Can I ask my wife to come in? She's outside. Feeling nervous.
Sure. What does it matter?
She has someone with her, a relative of mine.
Oh, tell her to come in. Let them all come in. Tell them to bring box lunches. We'll serve tea. Make mine cyanide.
Who is he?
John Q. Public in person.
Oh, my name happens to be Amos Golightly. Come on in, my dear.
All right.
This is my wife, Hattie Bell. Cousin Cornelia, who's from Cincinnati. She's visiting us this week.
Charlie. Yeah,
you do.
Hello.
We heard what you were saying, and we wanted to know what all this is about people being afraid. I'm not. Are you, Hattie Bell?
No, I'm not either. Are you, Cousin Cornelia?
I certainly am not.
Don't you read the papers?
Don't you listen to the news?
Sure we do. Don't we, Hattie Bell?
Oh, we certainly do. Don't we, Cousin Cornelia?
Well, we're no ivory towers.
Don't doubts bother you? Don't you wonder why you should bother with going on? Don't days seem empty and full of shadows?
Doubts and shadows don't appear to me to come from outside. They come from inside. That's where believing comes from. Right, Hattie Bell?
Right. Doesn't it, Cousin Cornelia?
It certainly does.
Now, I've got a neighborhood grocery store. Supplies food to quite a few people. Now, if I started doubting Chuck's steak, or my clerk wouldn't sell no more on account of the futility of spinach and baby's foods, a lot of people would be thrown out of gear.
What's that got to do with me?
Well, look at tonight. You went off the track, and then the other acting fellas had to go off, too. And the engineer fellows, and the musicians, and the director.
We want to be people again.
Land's sake, all this talk about people. I hear talk about people all the time, and nobody thinks what the word means. Tell me, Hattie, if someone came up to you and said people, what would you think of?
People? Oh, I think of you, and Mother, and Father, and Cousin Cornelia, and Robert Taylor, and the folks at the office, and crowds in the streets. And cities and villages and farms. What about you, Cousin Cornelia?
And newspapers and radios and factories and shops and boats and airplanes and the symphony and the dressmakers and the Republican Party and so on.
Well, of course, I think of the Democratic Party, but outside of that, we agree. All those labels underneath are people making them run. A lot of little people all depending on each other and making one great big word, people. And that word is bigger than any one man or any moment in time. I hope you get it, mister. You do, don't you, Hattie Bell?
Certainly do.
Me too.
I'd like to know why we're honored with this sermon, sir.
Oh, land sakes, it's no sermon. But when you gave up tonight, you carried everybody else with you. Any man can do that anywhere if he talks long and loud enough. One rotten apple in a barrel of good ones. It's like that. Fear spreads. So does distrust, suspicion. Well, it happens in a room like this, and it can happen in a whole nation.
And that's a bad thing to happen.
Tis, for a fact.
It's not as if I were the only one. Look all around you, every day.
Oh, there's others. Sure, sure, we know about the others. They've always been there. Some of them pretty big guys. They get alarmed, they lose faith. Get so they're willing to sell out everything to save their bankrolls or their handful of power.
I read in the paper.
I read the papers, too. I've seen how people can be betrayed. I've seen that idea rolling up and down Europe like a crazy man driving a steamroller. But I don't get scared. None of the people I know get scared.
How do you keep from it?
Well, I always remember that as long as we're not afraid, as long as we aren't divided by all the bogeyman scares and ideas, that all of us little guys together are bigger than any big guy. It says so in the Constitution.
Divide and conquer. Who said that?
I think I understand now, Mr. John Q. Public. But don't you ever get to wondering what's going to happen tomorrow? What about us? What do you think of us voices over the microphone? We winds, temple bells, board fades, household hints, sport broadcasts. What do you think we are?
Why, you're like us.
Why, the darling girl reporter, that lady acts out as one of my ambitions. If I weren't so busy with the kids, I'd show United Press a trick or two.
And when El Skunko, the perfume bandit, gallops through my room every night, Cincinnati fades away, and I'm with him tearing away across the Andes. He's romance to me. Why, even by the foot powder he advises. I think of them every time I use it.
Well, for me, sports, news, and history broadcasts. There you are. To me, well, you're a lot of people from different places and homes, having different ideas, all working together to make one thing, program. We people listening are like that, too. And we're all part of the same thing, whether we make programs or shoes or handles for automobile doors.
Okay, John Q. Public, you win. Mrs. Hattie Bell Public?
Yes?
And Cousin Cornelia Public?
Yes.
My imaginary hat is tipped to you as well.
Mm.
Hand me that script, honey. Chop fallen, I will resume my performance.
All right, position. Music.
Position. Music.
Thank you, folks. If you don't mind, we're starting the program. Drop in again soon and see us.
Oh, we will.
Yes, and it was such a nice visit.
I just can't wait to tell the folks in Cincinnati about it.
I wish sometimes we could hear from you more often. Sometimes it's hard to know what you people there on the other end of a wavelength are thinking about.
Well, shucks, it doesn't matter much what I say. Don't cut much eyes. Has nothing to do with the birth rate of hogs in Walla Walla or number of pounds of paper employed in women's clubs petitions. I'm just a cog in a big wheel, gentlemen, a penny whistle crying in the wilderness. One thing I know is I never talked so much before in my life.
Oh, now, Amos, don't forget you took first prize in the debating club back in third grade high school.
It was a real pretty medal, too.
Oh,
had
yes.
Henry Clay's picture on it.
Well, you have got to get on with the program, so we'll bid you all good night.
Good night, Mr. Amos Golightly.
And Mrs. Amos Golightly.
And Cousin Cornelia from Cincinnati.
Good night.
Good night.
Nice people, those.
I'm thinking, in all the houses covered by the gentle night, how many people are standing, divided, staring out of their windows into the streets, seeing the crowds go left and right, and others standing in the middle, holding mementos of last month, last year, 10 years ago, afraid of changing one thing they knew.
The Golightlys everywhere are not afraid. They don't stand still. They don't run left or right. They move forward. Why do we doubt, I wonder? What's really the solution for us? The hesitating, the unsure. It's strange. But for a moment, while Mr. Golightly was talking here, it seemed as if this little room and us in it were like the whole country. We were scared about going on. Thought we couldn't ever make it. Had no faith in going on, no desire to. Everything seemed to be falling to pieces. Now, it's different.
Now we know who we are. Because we remembered who we are, where we came from, what we really believe in. I wonder why we don't stop to do that more often.
I don't want to seem unorthodox, but may I remind you that at long last we're resuming the program where we left off? May I ask you to take your position?
Let's see. I'm going to start with that about the middle of it.
All right. Stage. Music. Mr. Hero, it was your line, I think.
Even our doubts in time's dark passageway showed us the wintry hills grown green as spring.
Say, wait a minute. I've got it now. I see what it means.
Oh, you're not stopping again. Don't tell me you're stopping again.
But I've got it. I really have got it.
What have you got?
The answer to all this. The reason. The solution. It's hard to get into words. Let me think.
Well, what is it? Tell us.
Well, we all...
Look at the clock. Look.
Listen, it's wonderful.
No, it's too late to talk now. It's 9:01. The program's over. Time's up.
But listen.
All that fuss when there was no program tonight after all.
But I've got it. Let me tell you all about it.
Better luck next time.
We bring down the curtain on our third presentation in the new NBC feature, The Listener's Playhouse. No program tonight, as Mr. John Latouche has called this play. Next week at this same time, The Listener's Playhouse will present Islam in the City of Silence by Albert N. Williams. Tonight's cast included Norman Lloyd as the director, Dwight Wiest as the hero, and Olive Deering as the heroine. Ian McAllister played the part of Amos Golightly. Special music by Tom Bennett was conducted by Joseph Stopak. the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.
That's it for this week's Relic Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed today's program. If you want to hear more from the Hallmark Playhouse, the Listener's Playhouse, past episodes of this show, and find everything else Relic Radio, just visit the website, relicradio.com. You can find our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, or visit donate.relicradio.com. Your support makes it all possible. Can't do it without you. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.